Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Today is Thursday. It's October 11th. That means 8 shopping days left till my birthday. This is John Williams, October 11th, 2018, at 11, now 14 in the morning. I'm John Williams, and this is the Mincing Rascals, a weekly podcast we record at the studios at WGN Radio. I'm on here weekdays 1 to 3 and Saturdays from 10 a.m. until 12 noon.
Justin Kaufman with the Steve Cochran Show, 6 to 10, as well as Download Podcast.
Patty Vasquez, I host my show with Andrea Darlis, and we're on weeknights 7 to 11, unless there's a sporting event, in which case we follow that until 1 a.m.
And I'm Eric Zorn, the increasingly dismayed columnist from the Tribune. I run three times a week, and you can find me at chicagotribune.com/Zorn.
I wanted to start this week in Trump land. We usually get to it. Sometimes we actually don't because it's just so there. But let's go there to start the podcast today. This week, the president ran an op-ed in the USA Today, Today, in which he largely dismissed the Democrat plan for health care. The Washington Post did a fact check of it and said almost every sentence contained an inaccuracy or a falsehood. And the question has become, is it right or wrong for the USA Today to publish without editing or commenting the president's words? I think the president is in a singular position in this case, but he's also known to be very fluid with the truth. Boy, there's a metaphor, eh?
Well, it's an op-ed, right? I mean, at a certain point, it is someone's opinion, and I would say that there are plenty of things from Eric's paper that I don't necessarily agree with.
That you publish it?
I would publish it. I'm interested. I think that the piece was just a slam on Democrats or what Democrats would do if they win the midterm. It didn't seem to be much.
It read like
substance.
A very long tweet or or a more intelligent.
But I think we're smart. Smart enough to know that that's a rally speech.
What do you think, Patty?
Right. The question is, do you ever fact check an op-ed piece? I'm not familiar with what that process is like, but this is the president of the United States, so it's actually a news story. So I think the USA Today actually had a responsibility to fact check what he was putting out there because it's different than somebody else writing an op-ed piece.
Eric Zorn, you're a print journalist.
First of all, yes, op-ed pieces are edited. We have editors, and we have to go through our pieces, and we actually have to literally put little check marks into our copy that don't show up in the paper, obviously, but we have to go through and sort of and assure our line editors that the factual assertions that we're making are accurate. Mm. Like if I say that President Trump was elected in 2016, I got to put a little check mark next to 2016 just because they want us to get our facts right. Now, there's a difference between, you're as someone has said, you're entitled to your own opinions, but you're not entitled to your own facts. And good op-ed editors, and we have good op-ed editors at the Tribune, go through columns and they say, you can draw these inferences if you want, but you can't draw them based on baseless claims. And that's where I think what USA Today should have done, if you guys want to take out an ad, Donald Trump wants to take out an ad in USA Today, sell it to him. If he wants to put out a statement from the White House saying this and then we can pick it apart in a news story, fine. But to run it just unadorned without any, you know, maybe run it side by side if you must with someone who points out all the errors that are in it. But no, I think he's not in a singular position as an op-ed columnist. We don't do that. Dick Durbin submits, Rahm Emanuel submits. We run those through the same sort of process that we run, you know, the regular daily columns.
So would you have sent it back? What would you have done?
Here's our fees for buying space in our paper.
Yeah.
An ad guy calls.
I would have given it to an editor and had him edit it and send it back to him and said, is this, you know, this is what we're going to run. This is what we can run. This is what we can't run. And, you know, this is the negotiating process that goes on all the time.
I guess
with
so. Okay, so then what do you do with this sentence? Today's Democratic Party is for open borders socialism. That's rhetoric. It's not, there's no real fact
isn't
there.
That's the problem with this whole piece. It's rhetoric. It feels to me when I read it and read all the, even the fact checking of it, it just feels like a campaign ad.
It's a rally. It's a rally speech.
It's midterm. They know they can run on health care. So I agree that there probably should have been more vetting, but I also feel like this is whatever the relationship is with the USA Today and the White House, that they were able to put this out, and I think the American people are taking it not as news, but as party politics.
Yeah, I hate to say this. I think I'm with you too, and less so with you, Eric. America has been 2 years into this term, so I think we get it. If this were somebody new to the game or somebody who's more traded in truths, then this might be alarming. But this feels like Donald Trump to me.
Let me ask you guys this,
though. Seriously do you take it?
I wonder, does it say that Republicans are running scared in the midterm, that the president put out an op-ed in the USA Today that was essentially slamming Democrats' ideas for health care that are not on the table?
Right. That's not even basic. Well, one of his campaign promises was that he would fight to keep pre-existing conditions as a protection, that people would still be able to lay claim to that. And yet he is doing everything he can to undercut that.
I still understand, John, why you think that USA Today or any publication is entitled to give the president a blank block of space in their organization. Say, fill it with whatever crap you want. You're the president of the United States. Why is that responsible or necessary in any way?
Maybe they're thrilled. I'm sorry, John. I didn't mean to.
No, go ahead.
No,
Patty.
Maybe they're thrilled that he wants to be in print. Print's not doing
well,
great
that.
These days.
We still matter, by God.
If, in fact, the president is trading in lies, then that is a story unto itself, isn't it? And if this is evidence or a vision or version of that, then I'm not sure that it is as inconsequential as maybe Justin and I are making it, right? This is Trump, and it's rhetoric, and you can set it aside. But they are the thoughts of the president of the United States. There should be some space for that.
Okay, so there's space. If you want to give space to that, then you, right next to it, with equal prominence, you have to give space to, Dick Durbin, let's just say, since we all know who he is, a prominent Democrat, to respond to what he said, so that it's not just a free campaign ad, which it really looked like.
So NBC reported this this week. This is a quote from their Twitter feed. President Trump directly accused Hillary Clinton of engaging in a conspiracy with Russia to affect the 2016 election during that rally in Pennsylvania. Close quotes. During a rally in Pennsylvania. So that's NBC reporting that the president is accusing Hillary of conspiring with the Russians to rig the 2016 election. Kind of a 180 of what we all think
very
happened.
Trumpian.
It's a 180 without any basis. And they did not say, and they're being accused of using the word directly. President Trump directly accused Hillary. The word they should have used is, anyone?
Allegedly.
Indirectly.
Or falsely.
Or falsely.
Falsely.
Oh. Falsely.
This has been the new world order the last 2 years about the responsibility of the news agencies in our country to fact check quotes. And the president says something that's a lie, and yet you're...
What do you do?
What do you do? Do you fact check the quote? Eric, do you say falsely acclaimed? I don't know if you do.
You give the quote, and in the next paragraph you give the reason why you would say it's false. I mean, it actually would carry more weight if you quote the president, and in the next paragraph you say,
because he is the ultimate newsmaker. I mean, that is, when he speaks, that those are quotes. Those are the quotes that we remember through history. These are the quotes that we use to start.
Man.
But they're the ones that start all the news stories. I mean, you see for presidents down the line. So it's hard for me to understand how a news organization could say falsely claim. Maybe Eric's point is right. They could go second paragraph and be able to debunk what the president said, but this is new times. Maybe we need a new style guide.
What are you thinking about, Patty?
I'm trying to figure out how you would phrase it, because I don't think a news organization wants to like say falsely. Right. I thought you meant allegedly. Did she allegedly do that? He says those things so he can have his, all of his supporters in the rallies yell, lock her up, especially coming out of this whole period when everyone said, we have to wait till the whole story comes out with Kavanaugh and innocent until proven guilty. And that's not the case in these situations. And throwing these things out there as a rallying cry. I don't know how else these news organizations should phrase it.
Here's how I think they should handle it. I don't think they should cover it. I mean, think about that. Then they avoid the problem. And is the fact that the president is accusing Hillary of rigging the election, and the only way you do that is maybe because the DNC had a connection to the dossier. I mean, I'm not in his head, but I'm trying to figure out even where he's getting this. But you could just ignore it, right?
But they're not going to.
I'll tell you what. I am personally at a point, and it's just happened slowly this week, maybe because I was out of town. I was in Denver in the Rocky Mountains for a few days with Brenda, visiting my brother and his wife, and we were having a swell time. We were out of cell service. I wasn't able to, every 10 minutes, check my Twitter feed. And when I've come back, I've sort of, I've realized that that can be done.
The world is still here, right?
I know, and that what? I don't need to get animated about everything the president says that sort of upsets me. Maybe we don't need to continue to follow his tweets or report. I'm being a hypocrite now, aren't I, Eric? Because I said maybe the USA Today should give him some space, but maybe as individuals we don't have to get too exercised about his lunacy.
Well, I've noticed that the cable networks are no longer covering his rally speeches as news. They're not running them wall-to-wall live, waiting for him to say something outrageous anymore because the speeches have become really predictable. It's the same story over and over again. It's not as interesting.
Here's another coverage question for you. I'll go with you first, Patty. The three major networks, when they did the ceremonial signing in of Brett Kavanaugh, not the actual one, but the one for show with the president, CBS ran it live. NBC and ABC did not. If you were deciding about the ceremonial signing in,
I guess I would go that I would not go live with it.
Yeah. I think precedent plays. I don't know what the precedent is.
Two other times, yeah. But it's atypical. It's wildly, and I was shocked that Brett Kavanaugh would cop to it because now he really does look like a political creature, not a judicial one, when he's standing there with that tiny little angry mouth of his, and he's and he's still looking ticked. He's not looking judicious.
Did you notice that his wife and his daughters were dressed like characters from Handmaid's Tale? That was it just me? Was I the only one that noticed
okay,
that they were
all being petty? Eric, your petty thought.
I would have broadcast it live because this was a very important and very interesting confirmation hearing, and this and what Kavanaugh said. I'm not so interested in what Trump said, although it was appalling as usual. But I was interested. I was interested in the way that Kavanaugh was going to approach this, and how he was going to try to bind the wounds that are open from this. Is that his job? I think it is his job. He needs to instill some confidence in the public because the public confidence in the Supreme Court is dwindling.
Well, in that case, he failed. I think standing next to the president, he failed. And then when he turned and looked at the president and thanked him for his support.
Mr. President, thank you for the great honor. I am grateful for your steadfast, unwavering support throughout this process. And I'm grateful to you and Mrs. Trump for the exceptional, overwhelming courtesy you have extended to my family and me.
You all of you are well-read and smart and articulate. It's Patty and John. I'm not sure about her. But I'm surprised that this went from a narrow scope FBI investigation to he's innocent. And you see the word innocent thrown around by Trump, and now this has really fanned the flames of this was a witch hunt, and this people text into the line and talk about how this was staged by Democrats. That there has been a move without evidence to this being just completely phony. And I don't get it. Did I miss a day?
No.
I know. Was I with you in the Rocky Mountains? Did I miss a day where this
the
was?
The president changed.
Does he
the
have
whole
more information
narrative.
Than we
he
know?
He changed the whole narrative. He did it with the whole drinking thing too. Instead of did he sexually assault her or try to, the president turned it into a drinking conversation. Does he have a drinking problem? Has he addressed it? And he said, but he has owned that he had too many drinks. Imagine if I had too many drinks. Would you want that? And it became a chuckle.
I want to give the benefit of the doubt to the president, and I know it's hard to do, but you wonder But the FBI report that is not public, was there information in that report that he is signaling to us that tell us that there was more to the Blasey Ford testimony or less to the Blasey Ford testimony? That they found something not credible?
Justin,
why does he say that?
That FBI report was a sham. That investigation was a nothing burger.
Sure.
They didn't do what they needed to do, which was you go to your sources and you need to spider out from them and talk to people who want to talk to you or who were suggested by those sources. They did not do that. That report meant nothing. It was designed from the start to contain nothing.
Sure.
I continue to believe 100% that Christine Blasey Ford was sexually attacked by Brett Kavanaugh when she was 15. I believe that completely. I'm not 100% sure that he remembers it. In fact, I'm guessing that there's a pretty decent chance that he doesn't remember it. But I'm sure that it happened. And I'm sure also that he lied during his confirmation hearing about his drinking habits, about his high school days. And no, you could never bring that case as a criminal indictment. Obviously, there's not enough there in terms of her story and corroborating evidence. It's not there. It's kind of what you believe, right? And Trump has turned this into framing it as innocence and framing it as questions about behavior that's more than 30 years old.
It's a head scratcher to me.
And he's successfully done that. And what when I said at the beginning that I was gravely concerned, that was my introductory line, and I'm gravely concerned not only that Brett Kavanaugh is on the Supreme Court probably for another 40 years or 35 anyway, he's only 53. I'm concerned about what that's going to do to the Supreme Court, to jurisprudence in this country, and civil rights and all the things that the Supreme Court is supposed to protect. I'm concerned about what this means for the Senate races, that because this has energized these Republican voters, that whatever slim chance the Democrats had of taking back the Senate and taking back some control of the courts and having exerting a moderating influence on the courts is gone.
That seat was going to go to a conservative anyway. I'm surprised that you're equating the two, that he lied to us about drinking. I believe in the ability of humans to compartmentalize. Clarence Thomas, I don't know, is he an incompetent justice? But we believe he lied about his sexual harassment. Isn't it possible that, this is my hope, that Brett Kavanaugh will be a good justice, you know, in terms of
being a justice.
And right. I wonder how much he'll overthink things now, too, based on how he got there.
Well,
I mean, and I heard that I was reading about how his first day there, he was asking a lot of questions, and because Clarence Thomas does not speak out that often.
Yeah.
I also wonder what this will, what the president's view of the FBI will be when the final report comes out from Mueller and the investigation. Will it, you know, if it goes against him, will he also, you know, continue to try to delegitimize them, when in this instance he has based his entire, you know, sort of rallying point about how this has proven his
innocence? Do you think? I mean, you really wonder? You're not really wondering.
No, I'm not. This is,
Justin, you, I think, used the word corroborating. I am so frustrated. Of course, there's no corroborating evidence. There's only two people there that can't be corroborating evidence in this case. There's
three.
No video.
But I'm with you completely. And what I don't understand is how it became political manipulation. And that's why I brought it up in the first place. Political manipulation to take that exact thing you just said, that we can't really know, to he's innocent. And I feel like a step was missed. That the FBI investigation to the American people, or to one party in the American, or one side of the American people, suggests that, he's innocent. This is done. She lied. She's a liar.
Right.
She set him up. Oh, this could happen to any of us. Men are under attack.
Oh, that's the thing.
I just don't understand how we skipped a step there. There still has not been a detailed investigation into whether or not this happened or not.
He gets cleared and she doesn't get cleared.
Yeah.
Do you think that she'll have or is having a lasting positive impact on America?
Patty Vasquez and the Mincing Rascals continue to mince in just a minute. So this is John Williams, and we appreciate the sponsorship of the Mincing Rascals by our friends at Private Vista. They can be your friends, too. Visit myprivatevista.com. Private Vista means private view, personal view. Private Vista is an evolved financial management company in the Chicago area, in the city and the suburbs. Private Vista's evolved approach is that they don't first ask you about your number. How much money do you have? How are we going to manage money? What about the money? Their idea is, let's first find out, who are you and what do you want to do when you retire? What is your Private Vista? And that's an interesting process. They ask you questions. There's a form, a questionnaire you and your spouse or partner fill out, and you discover a lot of things about who you are and where you want to be. And after you take some time to figure that out, then they also help you manage that money to make those ideas, those dreams, that Private Vista become a reality. Visit them online right now at myprivatevista.com. Back to the Mincing Rascals, Patty Vasquez and the rest of us talking about the lasting impact of Christine Blasey Ford.
For women, I don't know about, men seem to feel, as far as Donald Trump is telling them, they're under attack. But I think that more women are willing to come forward.
Well, it is a scary time to be a young man.
I wonder.
Is it scary?
What's the lesson?
Scary time.
That song is
great.
Are
they taking away from this what happened here, that you come forward and you tell your honest truth and you don't? I mean, the thing is, we talk about the corroboration. She did say what she remembered, and it would have been easier for her not to put a friend in the room. That was pretty obviously going to make it her
it's
story more difficult.
It's not corroborating evidence, Eric.
I know, but what I'm saying is that her story, there's a lot of things that have, like I said, the gong of truth to that story. But women who come forward, and people say, we're going to believe women, and then we don't. We think you're a liar. We think he's totally innocent.
I don't know who the we is in that sentence.
Yeah, it's
the people in power, I guess.
As women are thinking about coming forward, how are their stories going to be received, and how is it different? How are things
changed?
First of
all, the stories are coming out.
Since
I believe her, and you believe her.
Yeah.
I mean, I know there are people who don't. We need to get more of them in this room. Maybe not.
Does she look back? I wonder if she looks back on this and says, was that worth it? Is that I mean, the fact that I'm never going to be able to check into a hotel again without people going, I remember you. I mean, it's like Anita Hill. Was it worth it for her?
I think it was. Well, I mean, I think Anita Hill has a lasting, positive impact in America. She's part of the conversation. The needle won't move until some of these sacrificial lambs tell their stories, suffer the abuse that the process heaps upon them, but maybe the conversation is part of the process.
How did the needle move here, though? That's my question.
I do think that it may not. We might not ever be able to measure the number of women who are confident in coming forward. I do think it's going to have a positive. Maybe it's women my age.
Have you been getting calls and texts about women coming forward?
Have you? Yes.
And, you know, and as a more practical matter, you were listening to my show the other day and getting agitated, and I think unfairly.
It never occurred to you. Occurred to you all the different things that women have to consider.
Well, this is maybe part of the legacy of Christine Blasey Ford.
Well, can I say that it also because when you had that sort of dust up, let's say, with Amy Guth and the comments that she gets, it's just interesting that you're constantly surprised, which is charming about you in a way, but it's also like
that's not how she put it.
But in context of every time a woman says, or you learn something about what women go through. In fact, like, you know, the catcalling with Amy Guth and the song from this young performer about what, you know, women off, we don't want to live in apartments on the first floor or in hotel rooms. We check in, we don't take the first floor.
After the president said that this is a scary time for young men.
Well, I say that it's a very scary time for young men in America when you can be guilty of something that you may not be guilty of. This is a very, very... This is a very difficult time.
A woman in Texas State, a choreography dance teacher, wrote a song. It's called A Scary Time. I can't walk to my car late at night while on the phone. I can't open up my windows when I'm home all alone.
I can't use public transportation after 7 p.m. I can't be brutally honest when you slide into my DMs. I can't go to the club just to dance with my friends. And I can't ever leave my drink unattended, but it sure is.
And she goes on, but she uses this line, that it sure is a scary time for guys. It's a scary time for boys.
What was the Colbert writer who is under fire for saying, well, at least we ruined Brett Kavanaugh's life?
That was unfortunate.
But that's a great joke because his life was not ruined. He's a Supreme Court justice.
Yeah, that was irony.
But that's the point. Taken out of it.
But people don't get it.
Classic way that we can demonize comedians by taking irony and satire and things away from it.
Well, I think his life is a lot different. I think his life is, if not ruined, pretty sucky compared to the way it used to be.
He's the Supreme Court justice.
Who will always be known as that guy.
Asterisk.
Would you trade? I wonder if he would trade. I wonder if his wife would trade.
That's a good question. Hey, I feel like I have some way to comment on this. I have twins in college, male and female, boy and girl. I am concerned a little bit about the possibility that my son will be falsely accused of sexual aggression of some sort. I'm way, way more concerned about my daughter's safety and her life than I am his. I mean, it's like, it just seems obvious to me that none of what's happened here has really changed the playing field for young men. And it perhaps is shining a very useful light on the lives that young women or all women lead.
I just wonder, John, politically, we as Americans want, and I think people want this to be a conversation about right versus wrong. And what it is in Washington is win versus lose. And that's hard for us to deal with. I can't understand how the outcomes that have come out of this are the way they are based on a victory, political victory. So for Trump to put his fist up like, we won, we got it, we got him in. And I'm like, that's
the thing Brett Kavanaugh didn't get either. I'm going to fight until I win this thing. And I'm thinking,
winning and losing here?
The reason I went down the scary time by a woman named Lindsay Lab story was because part of the legacy, if you will, is that men maybe now appreciate more than they did before, certainly I do, how much more complicated life is for women. If you'd asked me generally, is it? Of course I would say yes. I get that. I'm a 6-foot white male. life's been easy for me. But have I spent time thinking about, feeling, or living the life of a female or a, you know, a person who's more intimidated by the everyday experiences of life than I am? No, it's just that's not me. Were any of these kind of revelatory to you guys when you listen to a list like
no,
this?
No, not now. I think that's probably why people are pissed at you about it.
I'm not mad at you. I just no, I think it's kind of charming
point being
in a weird
that,
way.
Yeah, I think that there's been a lot of great stories over time that have been revelatory.
Locally, in Illinois, and in the city of Chicago, let's just bounce a couple of topics off you guys. What are we making of two gubernatorial candidates and their money? Eric, do you have anything to tell us about them?
You know, I understand they're both very rich men, and they both apparently have investments over in the Cayman Islands, and they both of them are not as forthcoming as we would like about their full tax returns. And I kind of got to leave it there. I'm not sure that one of them is notably more or troublingly more secretive than the other about this, or that we should be more bothered by one's wealth than the other.
Which is so weird in their debates, isn't it? To have Rauner calling Pritzker a trust fund baby, and you're like, really?
He is trying to buy political office. He's trying to buy the governorship to be something for the first time in his life, because if he wasn't a trust fund baby, he would be nothing. And you know what? He tried to buy political office by donating to Rod Blagojevich.
It's the billionaire on billionaire.
In defense of that, I think that, Rauner did make his money the old-fashioned way by going and taking over companies and firing people. And Pritzker was born into wealth. I'm not sure that makes Pritzker less able to be a governor. I mean, all the things that they're arguing about don't seem to me to be policy-oriented in any particular way.
For them, I think that they have to take their wealth out of it. I mean, you just have to stop talking. I mean, they're not going to have any more debates. Was that the last one?
No, there's one on Thursday night. It'll probably be live-streamed on WGEM-TV, I think, or in Quincy.
Yeah, I think they've got to talk about the issues. They've got to talk about what their plans are.
They won't, though. The debates have been just these mortifying spectacles of these guys throwing sand at each other and insulting each other, and they sigh and they laugh at each other and they say, that's not true, interrupting each other all the time. They're just awful spectacles. And I've called for them to get rid of them and have them do one-on-ones with panels of journalists who can ask really tough questions and not get into this name-calling that they get into, but that's never going
to
happen.
Yeah, debates do sure seem to be so 1970s, don't they? Or 1960s. I mean, they do seem to be antiquated. We do need to find, there are better ways to sort of tweeze information from
like
these guys.
Like, it should be like Double Dare, like a physical challenge.
Right.
Like if you don't have the answer, a physical challenge, and you got to go through an obstacle course.
Like a Nickelodeon show. This is a great
idea. Cream.
It's slimed.
Slimed. I like it. Yeah, that's what I would add a little element of that.
Slipping and falling into pools of water.
I just tend to go by whatever they say in the commercials. And JB is
that's
running.
What they want you to do, right?
I'll tell you what. He did not mention that he was a trust fund baby in the ad where he says his mom was an alcoholic and wasn't able to make the contributions, except that she had these kids. And now he feels that it's his purpose to serve.
When I was 7 years old, my dad passed away, and my mother was left with three young children, and she was afflicted with alcoholism. She struggled valiantly to overcome a disease so she could take care of her own kids. And even though she lost the battle, she ultimately won, because although she passed away, all three of us survived. I think that when you watch somebody struggle, you develop a kind of empathy and understanding. It becomes your responsibility to step in.
I thought it was the most wonderful thing I ever saw. It was really touching.
One of the takeaways from this whole thing is, I wonder, and I've seen this in other industries or other genres of, like I think of food, like chefs. Chefs and restaurants in today's age don't need reviews. They don't need 4-star reviews. They don't need 1-star. They've cultivated a media empire that goes straight to the consumer.
Yeah.
They've bypassed the Sun-Times reviewer, the Tribune reviewer, right? And I wonder if that's happening in politics. I'm wondering if there's so much money that's put in, it's not to get Eric to write about him or for
the Tribune to
cover him and endorse him. It doesn't matter. Like, now they just go straight. They realize where the money is to manipulate you through the television ads. And I wouldn't even say television. I'd say social media. Now, you can't go to a YouTube clip without JB's face jumping in front of you.
Oh, my God. But I wonder if that's not working against him.
Again, can you tell me what's the big issue here? They're going to raise your taxes?
I don't know what the issue is. That's my point.
Like, I feel
all I
like
see is the commercials.
We are at a point maybe where we're seeing a whole journalistic, political journalist getting swept aside.
Well, I can't tell you how many people have told me like they're really disgusted with both candidates. They don't want to vote. They, you know, don't we have any better choices and so on? And the answer to that is no, we don't have any better choices. And this is a fairly stark choice between these two. I mean, Pritzker, no matter what money he was born into or why he wants to be governor, is a fairly progressive Democrat. You know, he's going to be, you know, pro-union. He's going to be, you know, he's in favor of a graduated income tax. He's social services. He's
legalizing marijuana.
He's a larger government guy. And Rauner is the guy who just says no all the time and is going to be giving us four more years of paralysis and dysfunction,
which our editorial
board seems to think is a good idea.
Thank you. Do I have to play devil's advocate for Rauner?
Are you going to make me do that?
It lines up with their belief that if Rauner just gets more time, he's going to get more of his reforms in. And if you let the Democrats have their way, they're just going to tax and spend this to oblivion. Okay, but those are stark choices.
They are stark.
And those are the choices you have. You might want to go third party, whatever, but one of those two guys is going to be the next governor. And if you don't care, then don't care. But
is there an independent vote in Illinois? I mean, is there a way that you're going to have Republicans who are going to go for Rauner, even though he's kind of fluffed that base? That base is very confused right now about what to do. But Democrats are going to go through Pritzker. Is there an independent swing vote in Illinois that says that like 15% that they're looking at? Or is that why we're seeing a 20-point lead in the polls for J.B. Pritzker? Because Democrats are energized to take it back, and Republicans are sitting this one out because of Rauner and his social woes.
There's Sam McCann, who's the Conservative Party candidate, and there's Cash Jackson, who's the Libertarian Party candidate, and both of them are going to draw some votes, but I don't think they are drawing the kind of independent voter you're talking about. I think the independent voter you're talking about, the one who's it may be thinking about sitting it out.
That's the one Rauner's apologizing to.
I think
right? I mean, when he gets up, he said, I made mistakes. I wish I was this. I wish I was that.
But he doesn't say that. That's the thing. He says that. Rauner 2.0, but he went back to Rauner 1.0 right away. I mean, he said, like, he came out a couple weeks ago saying, yeah, I was too aggressive. I was too, you know. And then, like, the next day, he goes back to just throwing crap. And it's like the idea that calling your opponents criminals, you know, and saying Mike Madigan is deeply corrupt and so on, it doesn't even matter if it's true or not. It doesn't get you anywhere politically.
I'm surprised there aren't more people who don't think like this. Illinois is all screwed up because of Democrats.
Well, let me just quickly interject that Illinois has had more Republican governors in the last 35 years or whatever the time than it has Democratic governors. And a lot of these problems that we're talking about were done with bipartisan agreement. You know, Edgar's pension ramp and Ryan's retirement.
I'm not saying what Thompson, I said is true. Thompson, I'm saying, yeah. I think that vibe is out
there.
Why not
run on that? Right?
I think there's plenty of people who go, why is Illinois screwed up? Well, Mike Madigan and the Democrats, .. And then it doesn't even matter what follows that third dot.
It's hard to do when you're the Republicans governor.
Right.
How do you blame it on another party when you have been there for four years, Justin? What do you think?
Lou Manfredini has this idea that after commercials, the Better Government Association or PolitiFact Illinois, somebody, the TV stations put up a little 3-second, you know, Pinocchio, if you will. The meter.
PolitiFact does the mostly false.
After the Kwame Raoul ad runs, what if we saw the TV station carves out 2 seconds somewhere, 4 seconds, and it says the previous ad was rated, boop, by PolitiFact, Illinois. And this is Lou Manfredini's idea. Then we would at least know if what we just saw was true or not. Do you guys like that idea?
I'm all about accountability, but I don't know. I don't know if
somebody's running the meter. I know that's not perfect, but let's believe that there is such a thing as an impartial judge who's just scoring the facts. What do you think of that idea?
It seems like it to force the stations to do that. It has some... maybe even some First Amendment.
We reached out to the managers of the TV stations, four of the TV stations in town, and the one that got back to us didn't like the idea.
I mean, it'd be like
John, I'd get behind it if they made it a fun cartoon character, you know, who like comes out and gives
Abe
you like a
Lincoln and his
vomits.
Axe go, or Abe vomits. Thank you, but something like
George Washington having with his eye going.
Well, it needs to be.
I cannot tell
centric.
A lie, but
right. I'm
J.B. Pritzker just did.
Show me some prototypes, and I'm in.
All right, what's your recommendation, Patty Vasquez?
I am actually beginning to read a book called the Dueling Fan Dancers, Feuding Fan Dancers. It's by Leslie Zemeckis. Actually, she's coming in studio in a couple weeks. But this is about Sally Rand and. Faith Bacon, who were the two top fan dancers in the culture and
nice.
The sort of incredibleness of.
Is there a Chicago connection to all of that?
Well, yes, Sally Rand was a performer here, of course.
I don't know that name. I don't know that story. So
A little before your time.
A little bit.
The Columbian Exposition. But
What do you like, Eric?
I like this. Speaking of the BGA, the BGA just did a report. The headline online is, "As Tons of Chicago Recycling Goes to the Dumps, a Private Company Profits." And the author of this was Madison Hopkins.
Boy, that sounds like a lot of fun. I'm definitely going to run out and read that.
It's actually really interesting because it talks about, I mean, it's all about how recycling in Chicago is totally screwed up and how so many of these things end up just in the regular landfill and we end up paying twice because we got to pay the landfill dumping fees. Really good investigation. It sounds a little like homework, I admit, but all of us or most of us go out and we dutifully separate our stuff into the blue bins and the black bins. And then to read the story, you realize that basically
I've always been a little suspicious of the blue bin. You know, where does it really go? So I take back my snarky remark.
It's excellent reporting. I think it's
amen to that. How about you?
Art and Design in Chicago, which is a show on TTW, which is a four-part series about Chicago's hidden or mostly overlooked art history, and not architecture and the buildings around us, but about the artists. And it's really great. And it's done by the Museum of Contemporary Art, and it's done by TTW. And then I would say Natalie Moore at WBEZ has a piece that I think is important for all of Chicago about what happened during the time leading up to the trial and leading up to the verdict with Jason Van Dyke, and this fear-mongering and this fear of black fear-mongering of black humanity, and how businesses downtown, and we haven't really talked about it, how businesses evacuated everybody.
Yeah.
And there was this fear of mass hysteria for some verdict that we would have wild and rogue riots on Kinsey, you know, in the moments after. There was hysteria in downtown Chicago from a business community. And she talks about it, and she talks about some of the imagery in the trial. It's very fast. I really, really enjoyed
it. It's interesting because I clumsily was trying to talk about this last week. There were posts that people in my neighborhood were putting up about how they were, you know, talking about where to meet and where to riot. And I was trying to talk more about what that was doing to the online sort of informing people or stirring up this fear. And Bertrand said that I was adding to it by ginning it up too. And I was like, no, there's something happening and I can't explain what it is, and it sounds as though
she hits it on the head. She's been a longtime author. She's at WBZ. She's also a great voice for Chicago.
What were those fears about? Because I think there was also fear. Well, no, but there's also fear. I don't think it was perfectly legitimate that traffic would come to a complete standstill because they were going to block the road. I mean, they blocked.
The marathon.
Ended up blocking. They got the guilty verdict. They ended up blocking Michigan Avenue for a while. So the idea that had there been,
but was it really traffic, Eric? Were they saying the 303 disaster preparedness plan was about traffic?
Ferguson?
I think there was a Ferguson effect. Baltimore felt that there would be Molotov cocktails coming through and angry black people running through the street and trying
just black people, but angry people. But
that I think there was the fear.
I mean, you do have Ferguson. You do have situations where this stuff happens. I mean, I'm saying it's not like they just completely made up the idea that there could be unrest following a trial like that. And some of the things that some of the activists were saying were like, you know, we're going to shut this city down. There's some understanding in some of those words that could cause people to think like, well, this things might go sideways here.
Right.
I mean, I'm not sure that's. I mean, I don't know what people did in response to that, but I don't know how. Was it just an excess of caution?
I think her point. I don't want to speak for Natalie because she speaks for herself much better than I do. But it was about the fear mongering in downtown Chicago and how everything was going to end like that if the verdict went one way or another. And then there was also some imagery issues of the defense and with the defense going after LeBron McDonald.
Darling Lent wrote about that in the Tribune this week.
I think
it's something that we should look at as a community. I'm not saying right or wrong. I think it should be brought up about how it kind of played out when the pressure was on.
There was an idea that the city was going to burn. That's what people thought.
Eric, we're out of time. How can we be out of time? It's a podcast, but this studio will be on live on the air in 5 minutes.
We all turn into pumpkins.
Lindsay Lab's Scary Time is a fun song and actually a thoughtful song, and it's both. And I'm reading Michael Lewis's The Fifth Risk. Of all of the books about the Trump administration, and I have read them all, this one, 150 pages, is spellbinding. I'll leave it at that.
About infrastructure.
Essentially, that's what it is. One department after another, and it's fascinating.
He makes fun of me for
and infuriating.
Recycling.
Thank you, Eric Zorn, Patty Vasquez, Justin Kaufman. This podcast, we call it The Mincing Rascals, is produced by Elif Garris. I'm John Williams. We'll drop another pod on you next week.
Subscribe to The Mincing Rascals podcast on iTunes or the Google Play Music Store. You can also listen online at WGNradio.com. Plus, catch highlights every Saturday from 11 to 11:30 a.m. on The John Williams Show on WGN Radio.